Welcome to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. This podcast series offers a fun and serious look at hypnosis and offers various ideas, discuss case studies, along with NGH educational opportunities.
Everybody, my name is Jeremy Bashan. I'm the executive director of the National Guild. Welcome to the NGH Hypnosis Podcast. My guest today is Mr. Scott McFall. We are going to talk about hypnosis and what we love about the profession and celebrating the 75th year of the National Guild of Hypnotists. So welcome, Scott.
Hey,
thank
Jeremy.
You for joining me.
Great. It's great to be here. Great.
Absolutely. So I just want to talk about, we've talked before on our podcast and in our legacy podcast, but what drove you to get into the profession of hypnosis?
Well, you know, the story that has been told before, of course, is when I was 11, I had a heart surgery where a nurse taught me hypnosis techniques to distract from pain when I was a little boy at Rochester, Minnesota, Mayo Clinic. And so as a little kid, I was very impressed by that and was drawn to it as a field of study. My grandfather was a chiropractor who was also into hypnosis with Harry Ahrens, as was my grandmother, Ruth. And my father and grandparents were also students of Dr. Thurman Fleet, who created concept therapy and conceptology. Rays of the Dawn is the book about that. So anyway, you know, family interest, excitement there, into performing and the clinical stuff. And so always into it, always studying it, always playing with it. It helped me. So I wanted to do it for other people.
And that's awesome. Yeah. So you and I are, we share something very special in common as a third generation hypnotist.
Right. And that's true.
My grandfather and my mother and myself and same on your side. And that's very cool. And also your daughter is
Dominique.
A hypnotist as well.
Yeah. Dominique is a pastor who also, she does do hypnosis and neurolinguistics type stuff. Right now, my three grandkids are what she's doing most, but she's been in the profession and worked a lot of client stuff. Very, very talented at what she's doing. And of course, Heather as well, who's done a lot of writing about it. But yeah, it's one of those things when you find out what ice cream tastes like, you might want some more ice cream. And if you understand what hypnosis can do or what understanding the thought processes of people can do, it's a lot of fun.
So in all your years of doing hypnosis with the general public, with clients, I'm sure they vocalize to you what maybe their fears are about hypnosis. What are the common things that you hear? I always hear the mind control. I don't want anybody to control me. What would you say is the common things that you hear about?
Well, you know, there's all the ways that people are worried about control, which is easily reframed if they know the truth. But what I would say is that since changing to believing that the hypnosis begins before they meet you, where it's in the public relations, it's in what's on the website, it's in the advertising, it's in what you allow them to learn before they get to you, like pre-framing the education of a client, I don't really hear these things and really haven't for decades because it's kind of taken care of in the pre-framing of the way that they come in. And so I think that starting with what the client needs help with, instead of starting with us, like what the error, I think, from my point of view, is that a hypnotist wants to teach and is zealous about hypnosis. Well, the client has an issue and is zealous about getting out of their issue. Like they need to lose weight, quit smoking, quit biting their nails, deal with stress, sports motivation, whatever it is, they have their thing they're going through.
Right.
Well, if the hypnosis or the neurolinguistics or the technique or whatever we're doing is a real solution to their real issue, and it's actually dealing with it, and we can prove it through social proof, testimonials, research, then these issues that we get into about the fear happen to disappear. And the reason is because we're starting with their issue, not us.
Right. So would you say that hypnotists are doing a better job in explaining or having the in this day and age, Especially with the internet, people do. I'm sure people do a lot of research before they go to a hypnotist.
Well, actually, here's the funny thing. The internet, the real answer is that there's lots of great information out there, but people make their decisions based on their emotions, justified second by their intellect. A wise hypnotist tries to understand the emotion the person's in and then either help them to move away from a negative or toward a benefit, right? So they start with online with the client and perhaps even podcasts with the client talking about what they're going through. And then the tools like hypnosis or relaxation or NLP are second because they're going to be interested and passionate because they have a reason to be passionate. They have a reason to be excited because it's about them, right? And when we get too technical too quickly, or when we get into the research because we're excited about it, or when our self-esteem goes up because we have let's say a network of referring physicians. Well, and when we first get those, we're yeah, aren't I, you know, aren't I cool? But the reality is that mentioning credentials in PR and marketing makes readership go down, makes click rates go down, but benefits and the things that people really need make click rates and reading go up. And of course, what's everyone's favorite subject? Themselves. So in the podcasts, in the videos, in the stuff that we do online, in the things we post on YouTube, how we communicate on LinkedIn, wherever we're communicating, there's maybe a formula, is there not, about them first, then the method or the way the point works with regard to technique, and then the outcome rather than, I'm so excited about this hypnosis, I'm so excited about this technique, I'm so excited about this person I'm working with, like I'm studying this method and oh, I'm so excited about it. Well, that's like your gardener saying, don't you love my new shovel? Don't you love my new shovel? And you're like, I just want to see a good garden, you know?
You know, that's great that you put it that way, and it's so true. We get excited about the new things that we learn, like we're learning this weekend at the conference. We always find little nuggets or little insights, or maybe a new thing that we didn't think of, and we get excited about it, and we're like, oh, let's try that out. But you're right, it is it the client themselves. We have the tools, but it is at the end of the day, it's the success that we have with our clients and helping them change.
And so I think when we're talking about hypnosis as a profession, the guild has done a ton to promote it as a separate and distinct profession. My family was into that as well because they were seeing it like chiropractic and medicine back then, and that's exactly what was going on here in hypnosis. And then John Kappas was also very big in this when he was alive and working on the separate SEC codes for hypnotists and so on. So all of these people have contributed, and I do see it as a separate and distinct profession with different philosophies and theories than labeling behavior. So, you know, I've trained a lot of psychologists, a lot of psychiatrists, a lot of various kinds of counselors and so on over the years. And they're, you know, mashed potatoes are great. Chocolate syrup is great, but chocolate syrup doesn't go on the mashed potatoes. And so not all philosophies are compatible with what we do. And what we do, if you think about it, one of the biggest things we do is cause the suspension of disbelief. We're causing someone to fixate. We're causing them to have this repetition take place, and we're having them suspend their disbelief. Yarnell's version of it was we're just making belief happen through suggestion, inducing belief through suggestion. That's it. That's what we do. And how many different ways do we need to understand when somebody has a negative belief? Or how many ways do we need to understand what happens after a hypnosis session when they're in their regular life, and how we need to have that go with them? So that client taking responsibility for themselves makes all the fear go away. So if we're in that, if we're in that pre-talk and we're saying all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, there is no such thing as hypnotizing another person. As I'm talking you through this, the person who's making the decisions to relax, that's you. Are you sincere about wanting to quit smoking? Yes, I'm sincere. Great. So do you take responsibility to follow? You know, and so the point is, who's under the auspices of doing this? It's It's them in every way that a pre-talk is written, in every way that a setup is written for bringing them into where you're going to do technique. Fundamentally, all of the greats had some way of doing this all the way
Right.
back, to the 40s, 50s, way
Sure.
back.
Yeah.
They had some way to get that person to feel safe because they're realizing they're the one doing it,
Right.
right? So at some point, I think we dispel the myth by risk reversal, where we're really making it quite safe because they're the one having that experience.
Absolutely. Now, would you say something like a fear of flying or a fear of snakes or something like that, in a person's mind, is that fear almost not becomes a habit, but it's because of repetition in their own mind, and a hypnotist is able to help them change that.
Well, a phobia like that, think about, consider the NLP perspective of that, where we're talking about like an anchor is formed at the peak of an emotional experience, right? So they're in fight or flight response. And as they're in that fight or flight response, they can only have either freeze, fight, fawn,
Yep.
and so on. Well, these four choices that they have, the thing is that once they're triggered, that's all that they're into, that's all that they can choose.
Gets locked in then.
Right, yeah. So I really like the neurolinguistics version of, for instance, phobia theater, the idea that you're dissociating them from the phobia because they're
Sure.
over-associated. A phobia is like over-associating in an emotion. They're not able to dissociate and be separate and looking at it from the observer position,
Right.
right? So, and that over-association, is a trance. Like we're just unhypnotizing
Sure.
them from a
Right.
trance, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
Yep.
which many hypnotists have realized that we don't really hypnotize people, we unfixate people. We un
Sure.
so
And that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
so if Braid was right to want to rename it monoideism instead of hypnosis, if that's true, what we're doing usually is adding resources. We're usually using inductive reasoning, adding resources rather than subtracting a problem.
Right.
We're adding a choice. Well, so people feel very safe when they're actually realizing that. But
Sure.
they might not feel safe if they're coming in. Well, getting the general public excited about it, the biggest thing is knowing that it works. If they're seeing the cases that have gone well, where people have been willing to share their
The
story,
testimonials and the proof of, yeah.
And then they're seeing the books and the materials that are legitimate, then we realize that they're either going to be into freedom, security, competency, belonging, or self-expression. And how we help them to feel motivated or secure with the hypnosis or have a great experience knowing they were hypnotized is going to be our skill at knowing this freedom person needs a little more pressure to have an experience. This
Right.
security person needs the pressure taken off of them and so on.
Yeah.
Right. So a hypnotist is working with.
It's almost finding how they're holding on themselves
Right.
onto that, and then switching the flipping the switch to the other way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
maybe, sometimes maybe it's opening a curtain so they can see the option.
Sure.
Sometimes it may really be like flipping a switch
So
for people.
it depends on the individual and
Yeah.
how they're holding on to whatever they need change or whatever habit they may have.
Right. I think, and you see this every day. You obviously deal with lots and lots of hypnotists, as do I. And I think that what we forget is we deal with changing people's state of mind first and intellect second. When we feed that intellect a little too much, we maybe take all the mystery away. It's
Sure.
like a magician explaining tricks instead of a
And then
magician
shown
entertaining you.
it.
Yeah. So maybe the mystery isn't so bad. Maybe some of the mysteries.
Yeah.
And there are times when provoking clients, but in provoking clients to have a different state of mind, what if somebody's going through the stages of grief, like the book that Dan Burrow just did on my work, which was Ch Change and Maturity, called the book. Well, I have this belief that people are either in the denial part of change or the anger part of change or the bargaining part of change or the sad part of change. And so as a hypnotist meeting people, the problem that we can arrive at is if we're doing a session on them and they're going into the anger part of it, we're going to only be dealing with a very small part of whatever they're
Right.
going through. If they're at the acceptance part of it at the end of it, well then, the whole trance work thing is going to work amazing because they're generalizing and
They've gone through
right.
those steps. Okay.
So what happens when people show up and they're not through those steps sometimes is you're taking them through those steps. And of course, the problem with that is that's the opposite of rapport. So there are two basic ways you're going to be as a hypnotist, and one of them is going to make people feel happy, and you're going to be in rapport and matching and doing all kinds of wonderful things. But if they're stuck because they're placating everyone and not leveling, then that hypnotist might be a little bit more of a look more like a drill sergeant for a little while, or trigger something in them that is needs to they need to get through, right? So we're trance work is working with their state of mind. And one of the questions you got to ask is what state of mind were they in coming
Where
in?
are they at? Right, right, right.
And so to keep the general public excited about hypnosis, think back to when Professor Leonardis was doing shows. Most of the myths about hypnosis were created by hypnotists on purpose. And the reason they would create those myths is so that people in town would debate whether it was a good or bad thing, so they'd fill the theater. Think about early paleontology at museums where they would just grab bones and they would make up a new animal with various pieces because they wanted to fill that museum. They wanted to sell tickets. So in some ways, is hypnosis a science? Is hypnosis an art? Well, it's both. And so the art part of it, the theatrics part of it, the reason that we can go to a movie and get so into it that a movie can change our life because it changes the mood or gives an insight, just like a play or a book. Well, in trance work, we're lucky because we get to do that with a state of mind that makes them more agreeable than they would otherwise be, right? But I think that the mystery and the wonder needs to be there. And so sometimes I think what we do is we make ourselves boring by making ourselves too scientific. It's like, and
You got to find that even medium of both of the art and the science of the of hypnosis. I mean, it's
And the individual hypnotist tends to go with whichever thing they're trying to prove about themselves.
right.
If they're a competency person, they're all about the science thing. But of course, they run the risk of being like watching paint dry,
Right.
And so I think stage shows still get more people to go to clinical hypnosis than any other factor. I think seeing stage shows makes people ex inspired, shows them the interesting stuff that can take place. And I really think that's why I like really highly trained stage hypnotists who are also doing clinical stuff. And I like those people having close relationships with psych professionals and MDs and so on, because there's a bridge there that is a it's accepting the fact that it's an art and a science at the same time. And it's showing what can really happen with the mood and theatrics of that art. And I think that's how you get people excited.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about stage hypnosis. I know you're an entertainer, you're a magician, stage hypnotist. And you're right, when people go to a stage show, they're like, wow, how are they making them do that?
There's a real opportunity when you're educating a full room of people in a stage show. There's a real opportunity to inspire, and it doesn't just have to be to inspire them to go to a hypnotist. You can inspire them to control their mood. You can inspire them to transcend something they're going through. You're aware that I've gone through, I mean, we've known each other well enough to know that I've had multiple heart surgeries over the years, have a leaking valve at the moment, currently on drugs for other illness and so on. And the hypnosis really does help you to step above it or get out of the self-pity long enough to get other things done and so on. So you've got this audience and you are in a sacred position where you're getting people to pop out of that self-pity. You're getting them to chase certain goals. Maybe you're even salting the cut of something that they need to move away from. And so Dick Sutphin, I remember
Yeah,
Dick
sure.
Sutphin, in one of his books, he said a hypnotist can't need to be liked. And Dick and I talked about this at length one day, and that you need to have enough leverage that if leveling is what needs to happen in healing, that is what happens. And you need to know how to use rapport. But the entertainer can use rapport or provocation from the platform. And that provocation is, it can be just as healing as the rapport or the kindness is wonderful. But if somebody isn't noticing they're about to walk off a cliff, it's okay to get louder while you're explaining the cliff is there.
You sometimes need the authority figure
Yeah.
in a way. I and in the same I have my coaching background as a
Yeah.
wrestling coach,
Right.
so
Yeah.
it, you know, I understand where you know there's times where I have to, no, I have to put my foot down and be like,
Right.
no, this is how we got to do it, because if we don't do it this way, it's going to be unsafe for you and you may get
Right.
hurt. But I also have the compassion when a kid comes off the
Right.
mat crying after losing after 10 seconds to be like, hey, let's get that. We'll get them next time, you know, build them back up. I always try to teach all, you know, try to stay the same with all my wrestlers, whether they're the best wrestler on my team or the worst wrestler on my team. I always told them the same thing. Hey, good job out there, but we got to work on this,
Right.
and this.
Right.
Even with my best kid who, you know, goes out there, wins. Hey, coach, come. Hey, good work. But we got to
And
work on this,
yep.
this, and this.
That may be one of the real sacred things about performing and doing hypnosis in an office is realizing you might be teaching someone for the first time in their life
Yeah.
how to be safe taking feedback. Now, the issue is, how do you get their attention of that behind their mask, eye in their head? And that is not always rapport. It can be.
Sure.
But if you have no attention, then you have no interest, you have no consideration, you have no actually doing the techniques. They're just placating you as a hypnotist. And a lot of hypnotists can be conned by their clients because they don't expect them to be real, or they don't understand that they're getting behind that
Just kind of
placating.
compliancy.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
So you don't want people leaving your office thinking, I just went through the motions.
Right,
You
right.
want people knowing they had an
But
experience.
going to a good stage show, a
Yeah.
hypnotist stage show, I'll tell you, the feeling that, you know, because I love the stage shows at the end where the hypnotist gives you those positive suggestions as the crowd.
Right.
You know, not just the people who are on the stage, but the audience
There you go.
watching.
Yep.
You get that same feeling of feeling great about, you know,
Right.
and it's just like, wow.
Right.
And that's where you get those people who are like, I got to try this because I want to work on this on myself. And that is it is a great selling point, and a good, well done hypnosis show will bring in client referrals.
For sure. And
Yeah.
a few years ago, when I was performing for you folks out here, we did a Azra levitation illusion thing at the end of the stage show. And the thing is, you know, when you're doing illusions, you never do them enough times a year to really have them as tight as you wish they were. But that particular illusion, the reason that I did it is I wanted that audience standing up thinking they were participating, and the audience was having the good vibes and giving the energy to each other and all of that sort of thing. And the whole point of it was to inspire that mood,
Yeah,
right? That
yeah.
mood in them. And so the shows do that. Great demos when you teach at a local college does that. Like if you're doing the not for credit courses in the adult learning area of a
Yeah.
local college,
Yep.
and the thing is that in those venues, you find out what to expect when you're in the office. And so the hypnotist becomes much better. I don't think any clinical hypnotist should have the lack of experience of doing stage shows. I think they all should have to do a couple. And they go back in that office and they know this is supposed to be legitimate. They're supposed to really feel that arm stiff, or they're really supposed to have
Right.
their eyes stuck. It's not supposed to be at
It
wonder if.
it's funny that you say that, because I'm thinking of, you know, the certification course, somebody who's just going through it. All the same things are shown as the as part of a stage show, the stiff arm or the arm rising and dropping, or the depth testings in all of that,
Right.
is it's the same in an entertainment format or in your office while you're working with clients.
And it really should be. And so we said that people are into freedom, security, competency, belonging, or self-expression. The competency-based people, the academic, the competency-based person, they frequently fall in love with whichever method they think is the one that is intellectually elite, right? And the thing is, your client doesn't care about that.
Nope.
And another thing Yarnell used to point out, he says, I know hypnotists that are brilliant, that are highly educated. And I know hypnotists that are brilliant that are not highly educated,
Yeah.
because it turns out it's about what happens in the client. And so, yeah.
Exactly.
And
But as a hypnotist, you need to know which tools to
that's
use
right. That's right.
with certain clients.
That's right. And it's like charm. Hypnotists will say, well, I'm an introvert. Yeah, but you can be an actor.
Sure.
You can be what the client needs you to be that day. And that is the fun of it, is if you're doing stage and you're learning method acting really is a form of trance, because you're going into an altered state and you're
Yeah.
going into the moods that that person would be having in this in the show. You're being something in a kind of a trance.
Right.
And so then you learn, oh, as a hypnotist, I really do need to be trancing out when I'm doing these inductions, because if I want them to go into that state, I've got to go into it first, because I'm talking them in through that process. And so all of a sudden it becomes a different kind of sincere,
Yeah.
and it
Yeah.
becomes a different kind of relationship. And so yeah, I mean, it's magical. And I think that tolerating being in front of people and tolerating the scrutiny of crowds puts you in a different level of confidence and centeredness when you're
Sure.
working with anybody, whether you're a coach or whether you're a hypnotist. I think that that tolerance of scrutiny, which has risks and drawbacks and
It sure
stuff.
does.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
But the thing is that living that life, living the life of tolerance of scrutiny, is the confidence that becomes the lever and the magnetism
Yeah.
to help other people. The magnetism comes from the peace with scrutiny that many people have not achieved.
Right.
So yeah, being a performer and getting over that worry about what everybody's going to think, knowing the sun comes up tomorrow, even when you did the worst job you ever did, Elliot, you didn't die, it's okay. And
Yes.
confidence really comes
Yeah.
from knowing you lived when it
Putting
went bad.
yourself out there.
Yeah. And when it
Yeah.
goes bad and you find out you didn't get killed or struck by lightning,
Hey.
confidence comes from when it goes bad and
Yeah.
you're okay. It does not come from when you do great, because then you're worried the next one might not go great.
Yeah,
So the weird thing is
sure.
that the security comes from doing
It's not
enough.
really the fear of failure, but
That's right.
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you fall in love with the fact that magnetism, we always talk about magnetism, animal magnetism, Mesmer, the magnetic concepts done with the hypnotist or Reiki or whatever. But if you want that magnetism, as opposed to radiating and trying to make a point to someone,
Yeah.
but if you want that magnetism and that leverage that comes from peace of mind from doing all these shows and putting yourself out there and going through all of those things, right? And it's the courage of your convictions. A hypnotist has the courage of their convictions.
Sure.
Orman saying they're the captain of the ship.
Right.
So a hypnotist has all of the best hypnotists I've ever known have this peace about the courage of their convictions. And that means that they're very good at finding out that they're wrong. They're not stubborn per se, unless they're doing a pattern interruption or trying to help somebody change.
Right.
They're doing it for them, not because there's,
Right.
but the thing is that they are good at feedback. They're good at knowing how to learn or change or when they're off.
Yeah.
And that's where you learn that more than anywhere else. You get your ego just kicked in, is in performing. If you perform and you
Yeah.
keep your ego, something's wrong.
Or even public speaking
Yeah,
and
that's
being,
right.
yeah,
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
because you should be finding corrections coming from everywhere, that some are real, some are not, some are just your own fears. But the whole thing, it's raining feedback.
I find that I'm my own worst critic
Oh
when it
yeah.
comes to public speaking. I'm always like, oh man, I could have done this better. I could have done this better. And then I have people from the crowd come up, what an amazing talk, you know? And it's like, well, I beat myself up more than.
Well, you are sincere, and people who are sincere, when you're actually a sincere person, you already have 90% of it done. Because if you're just sincere doing it and you're a real person, you're
It's
already,
just coming out there.
yeah, there,
Right.
that's how it is.
Right.
And so, you win through that sincerity. And that's, and it's a great quality. And Orman was an incredibly vulnerable encourager of your conviction.
And you're talking about Orman McGill,
Yeah.
the American Dean of Hypnotism.
Yeah.
Just so people on our podcast
Yeah.
are like, "Ooh, who's Orman?"
Yeah.
Orman McGill was an amazing man, not just a gentleman, but a gentleman.
Yeah.
And we had the privilege of both being with Orman and meeting him.
Yep, great guy.
Great guy, absolutely.
Yeah, saint of, well, how would I put it? He was a big enough star in his day that he needed nothing and was brilliant at audiencing other people.
Yes.
And so he was very good. Was it John Stetson that performed last night?
Yes.
John came up and talked to me today, and he was so cool about talking about being open with your knowledge or open with what you're teaching other people. And
Yeah.
John was on that topic today, and I flash back to Ormond. There's a in the theater, there's always a director, and in hypnosis, my career has been playing the director for other hypnotists more than
Sure,
anything else,
sure.
and that means
Running schools and having many, many people. You're a mentor to many. You've
many,
had
many,
many, many students over the years who you're their mentor. You're,
right.
yep.
And the thing about feedback is you're playing someone counter to type for flexibility, right? So if somebody's being mentored into high skill, then what you're doing is you're teaching them to be flexible, right?
Right.
So in the theater you have a director, and those actors might be driving home, and that director might be in their head, or the coach.
Yep.
Oh, but you're wanting to you're when you're gonna go from, hey, I've gone through the basics and I'm doing okay, and now I want to really be a professional, or I really want to take this a long way, then it takes outside objective view and your view both, right?
Sure.
And so it's something I take very seriously, and it's been a my pleasure and just a wonderful career to, and I'm just really blessed to be able to spend my life giving this feedback.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not always it's not it's exactly like when you watch shows like Restaurant Impossible
Sure.
or
Yeah.
Kit Hell's Kitchen,
Yeah.
where somebody goes in to try to make someone's restaurant better. And those relationships are a head trip, because sometimes they're just gloriously easy and lovely and wonderful. And sometimes the person really doesn't know how feedback works.
Right.
So, being a consultant for outside business, we also do that for web marketing companies and all kinds of other companies and medical places and so on. And so, getting someone to see that,
It's tough to take criticism
right,
of
yeah,
something that you've put all your life into.
right,
It's like, it stings,
yeah.
but those who take that and make the changes, that's what it's all about.
There's a great chapter in Connie Ray and Steve Andreas's book, Heart of the Mind. There's a chapter on responding resourcefully to criticism. And it basically teaches a three-choice way of doing it that all the greatest people at taking criticism happen to have.
Okay.
And it's a great chapter. And we, as hypnotists, are allowed to help someone to see a completely different world than the world that their head was allowing them to see in the first place.
Yeah.
But see, when we're seeing a different world, the question is, what is our relationship with facing the things that we need to shift? Are we ha nice to ourselves when we have that happen? Or is there horrible fear and fighting? And so the person's behavior, whether you're a hypnotist and people are coming in for a screening, that's why we have risk reversal there. In all the clinics that I consult for, that is a free meeting, whether it's online or live.
The consultation
Right.
part
Yeah.
where, yep.
Because the client needs to be in no risk as you're setting up the formal proof that this is going to function for them. And so there are other ways to do it. I believe that total taking away of the risk of the process in the beginning is by far the best way to set people up to do a program. But at that point, we're taking them from a model of the world that they used to have,
That they know.
yeah, that they think is true,
Right.
to, hey, we're going to fantasize this other possibility.
Can you let your mind go there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're defending this old, let's say if they're rationalizing why they think this had to be this way, the hypnosis will help them to a point,
Sure.
but interrupting this pattern over here is another issue, right?
Right.
And especially in business consulting. So the guild is very good at teaching and rapport and connecting and the hypnosis stuff that people need to do as a separate profession. And then a lot of the advanced people that are trainers and folks floating around the guild are also good at being the theater director.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
the theater director might be taking people into stuff they didn't want to see, or might be, and you want it to start and end great. You want it to end great. You want it to make
Right.
sense. And the worst thing that can happen, of course, is get 50% of the
And
way and then just,
then right back.
yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
yeah. And that,
or just thinking the feedback is rough or something.
yeah.
Because
So
it's,
to put that into perspective with just like a client,
yeah.
if they're not willing to make those changes, hypnosis will not work for them.
Right. Well, the hypnosis may work, but the lifestyle change may not.
Right.
They may have a blast at the office and go, "That was so relaxing, and I'm so glad I'm here." But see, if we want them to have an epiphany, which is what's the ultimate point, is some kind of epiphany where that knowledge or that insight is theirs now. It's when they go to check for it, they have it,
Right.
right?
Right.
And so the whole thing is based upon that you have a complete experience that goes from the point A to point B, and this point B is that they have a new view. They have why you did it.
There's an inkling in there that you gave them insight about. Yeah, so per se, if somebody came to you said, I want to stop smoking, you say, why do you want to stop smoking? My wife wants me to quit, but they don't want to. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you can still put them through the hypnosis and they may take something out of it. And it might help them in a different part of their life,
Right.
but that main thing that they didn't want to change.
Right. And you can play tactics there. There are tactics that you could use to get them, like take them from where they are to actually knowing they want to do it different, let's say,
Yep.
as an example. And that's
So
usually
there are different avenues to work with those who may not be ready, and then you find out the reason why they're not ready, and you may be able to shift that mindset, and then the change may happen. Is
Right,
that
right. You can intensify the pain of the problem to the point where they're willing to make a decision. And that's counterintuitive.
right?
And so when a hypnotist is helping someone, maybe the first thing you're helping them to do is know that they actually desire the change that they're there for.
Obviously, a client who comes to you and says, I really want to do this,
Yeah.
those are the better clients to work with because you know they're fully invested in
Right.
wanting to do that for themselves.
Yeah, timing. And you're right. When the timing is right, it's easier. And sometimes we have to take responsibility for saying, what moods would this person have to go through to be at that decision or that timing? And so this is why we
Maybe
have to.
work them that way
Right.
towards that direction,
Right.
and then when their timing is right, then they'll come to you, okay, now I'm ready.
Yes. And that might happen in 20 minutes talking to them, or it might happen
Sure,
in 20 years.
sure.
But the game is to try to get them to experience what they need to go through right then, if you can.
Yeah.
And but the to the general public, fixation, relaxation, repetition, inducing belief through suggestion, you're gonna have that happen in your life, whether you go to a hypnotist or not. It's gonna happen.
It's every day.
Yeah, it's going to happen when you're getting fixated on Netflix and going through binge watching many because you're in the trance of the alter world of that show and you just keep going to the next show. And so, when you have that fixation, repetition, and you begin to suspend disbelief, and you also begin to transcend the way you were reacting to your body, it's worth becoming good at it, and it's worth it if all you're going to do is motivate yourself and learn how to shut your mind tightly to unwanted, unneeded crap.
Yeah, absolutely. I know hypnotists who have taken the certification course just for them, just not to help anybody else, just for them, and to better their own life. They, you know, they're
Gil,
like, man, this is amazing.
yeah, to amen that point, Gil Boyne used to say 85% of the people who get certified in as a hypnotist do it to help themselves or their family, not to do it as a profession. And the ones who decide to be professionals are usually motivated and have a kind of a passion. But 85, full 85% are doing it for their own
Isn't that
use.
amazing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, every day hypnotists use self-hypnosis. I use it for calming, relaxing. You know, I do it to ground myself. You know, you use it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You said your medical things. You
Oh, yeah.
use self-hypnosis that way. I know some of the greats. Charles Tebbets, he used it to block out pain, and he didn't know he had something going on with him. He used
Right.
it so deep.
Well, that's a good point in training. You know, we always say you need a medical referral for these certain things because we don't want to mask symptoms, which is the common textbook version of it, you know. But yeah, I think self-hypnosis, think of it like maybe in life, stress makes a person dissociate and stop experiencing maybe what they should experience when they're having a problem in a relationship or something. Well, that's a kind of trance when they're dissociating. Maybe learning hypnosis is about having control of that trance. When you're dissociating, when you're associating, knowing you can get in the process of how you react and actually control your state of mind, maybe that's the real blessing of self-hypnosis when you're taking that course. Maybe the everyday ability to control that mood 1,000 times more than you used to is the point.
Hey, you know, when I talk to you know, just general people about hypnosis, and I explain that in your everyday life, highway hypnosis, or like you said, watching a movie, how you get so enthralled into it. It's a form of hypnosis. And they're like, wow, I didn't even think about that, you know? And when they realize that hypnosis is an everyday thing that you'll be able to help yourself or others with everyday ordinary problems.
And we have a 30 movie list for that purpose, by the way. Just 30 movies that have plots that should be in a hypnosis session. It's fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you, Scott,
Thank you,
for
Jeff.
having a conversation with me celebrating the 75th year of the NGH. But I thank you for taking your time out of your day to join
You too,
me.
man.
And
Good.
thank you so much.
Good. Have
Have
a
a
great one.
wonderful day.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. You're welcome to share your ideas for future podcasts by emailing us, nghpodcast@ngh.net.